For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast that's a little bit worried about its reservation at the Cambridge Red Deer Hotel right about now. It's time to do a little New Year stargazing. Taylor, how's it going?
Sorry. Oh, man. That intro is amazing.
Laugh through the pain. Laugh through the pain.
I mean, that's where we're at. So, you know, that's just what we're going to do.
It finally, you know, feels like the rest of the world is aligning to where the Dallas Stars, the rest of the hockey world, rather, is aligning to what we went through as Dallas Stars fans last season. And it's not pleasant, I would say.
It's really not great. Understatement of the century, probably.
It's really not great.
You know, it's so weird because, like, on the Defending Big D Twitter account a couple days ago, an Avalanche fan was like, you know, us Avalanche fans have been waiting patiently. If these games get canceled, what do we do? And I'm like, dude, there are no winners here. It does not matter. And also, while, yes, I would love to see entertainment in front of me, a little concerning that the Stars have went from 1 to 6 to 8 to 11 players in COVID protocol. And they're probably not done yet because three of them that they put on the COVID list on Wednesday, Ryan Suter, Jamie Benn, whoever else it was, insert player, Luke Glendinning. Two of those guys were on the ice with the only healthy guys left.
I mean, it does seem, as much as I'm all for work and hard work and all that, so it does seem like if somebody's positive, given what we know, if somebody's positive, maybe holding practice is not the way. You know, give it a couple of days, have the guys, you can do film sessions remotely, like have them chill out just a little bit while things get taken care of, right?
Well, you know, the thing is they actually did do that. I mean, the league paused for
the holidays. No, the league certainly did, yes.
No, the league paused for the holidays. The Stars weren't on the ice the 23rd through the 26th or whatever. So there were a couple days. So they put Yanni Hakanpää on the COVID list on Christmas Eve on the 24th. And they'd already been off the ice for a day, their game being canceled. And then they had five more cases when they returned from that break. Look, we're just going to follow the line back. This is all Nashville Predators' fault. If y'all didn't know, you can follow it back. They played the Chicago Blackhawks, who turned around and played Dallas. And then all of a sudden, Dallas has an outbreak. Nashville was in the midst of having like 10 players on the COVID list at that point in time. So I'm just saying, it's Nashville's fault. But yeah, they were off the ice. And I think that what we're seeing really is the transmissibility, if that's the word, of the Omicron variants. I mean, you have to assume that that's probably what's going through the NHL right now, just given how quickly it's spread. Yeah.
And especially if you take league statement at their word for, you know, when you look at the vaccination rates and what tends to be happening with this, you know, so far, and I'm knocking on wooden surfaces here, right? So far, it's spreading quickly through a vaccinated population, but what we haven't seen yet, certainly doesn't sound like anybody's having any fun with it, right? But what we haven't seen yet are reports of, you know, serious illness, serious hospitalization, the like. So you're right, it does seem to line up with what we're seeing everywhere, which is it doesn't seem to be stalled much by the vaccines, but it does seem to be mitigated at least somewhat, knocking wood, right? Hopefully.
Yeah. Rick Bonus, they finally met with the media. So, you know, they closed practices to the general public, which I was like, haven't they been all season? But whatever. But then they closed them to the media as well, coming out of the Christmas holiday, and then they were like, so no Zoom availabilities up until Tuesday. And so on Tuesday, we finally were able to talk to him, and he said that while they have practically at this point almost as many players as they had back in January with the COVID outbreak, it's not nearly as symptomatic, and they're not nearly as like the symptoms aren't as bad. So if anyone is feeling bad, it's pretty mild, which is good. And, you know, bodes well for guys at home who are in quarantine, being able to maintain their fitness level through, you know, workouts at their home gyms or in their home spaces, whatever they can do.
And swinging to it, you know, it's obviously there's a human good that people aren't severely sick. But the other bit of good is while all of this is going on, the NHL continues to postpone and continues to cancel games. And we as Stars fans know firsthand what a schedule looks like once large swaths of postponements have to be accounted for. So anticipating that it doesn't seem to be over league-wide yet, certainly. And I think it's foolish to come into the second half of the season thinking that there aren't going to be at least some, you know, some schedule shuffling, some games move, clumps here, clumps there, right? So anything that can be done to mitigate kind of the effect on, you know, anaerobic ability, energy levels, whatever you want to call it, right? The less disruption, the better, knowing that this group is likely going to have to play at least portions of a condensed schedule here down the line.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, I think that the schedule in some ways it could be
they got 3 weeks back, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, like, in some ways, although and we'll talk about, you know, Olympic participation here in a second and what that means, but
or will we that's a tease. I'm trying to keep them in, you know. I don't want anybody to like tune out
until that segment. So in some ways you've got some time left, and I actually looked at the schedule of the American Airlines Center, and while there's pockets in there of stretches where they wouldn't be able to book anything. I mean, the Dallas Mavericks are at home a lot in the month of February. I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but they do have still a manageable number of nights in there where they could make up some of these postponed games. And I mean, I don't know what the league's mentality is going to be in terms of shuffling around opponents. Like, there's a possibility that, you know, maybe, because I don't know if y'all have looked at April, but April was going to be maybe not so fun for literally anybody. I think the Dallas Stars were practically playing a month-long worth of season schedule similar to last year in April because of the condensement that they had to do to account for the Olympic break. So there's a possibility that they could just reshuffle the entirety of the schedule from like February onward, or because they already have the dates, you know, maybe you shuffle around opponents. I would be curious
because then you get into a whole bunch of border issues with the Canadian teams, right?
That's another wrinkle here. Like, you know, there's a game in April where Dallas is supposed to play, I believe it's Winnipeg. And I think when I actually wrote about this on the side, I said, you know, why don't you just move that game into February and play Winnipeg two nights in a row at the American Airlines Center? Both of them are home games anyway. You alleviate a back-to-back in April, but also you reduce the travel and exposure of the Canadian team because they're in one place. You can kind of semi-bubble them, you know, on the road, whatever. And so you just get those games out of the way faster. So I do wonder if we might start seeing some of that. I don't know until we start seeing the revised schedules come out, what the league is considering.
And I think it's revised schedules, but I think before you get to the revised schedules, like, there are the situation amongst not just the Dallas Stars, but league-wide is still very much developing. So, you know, games continue to be moved, players continue to be positive inside Dallas and out. So part of me wonders if we even have some ways to go before there's enough availability certainty to start looking at the schedule and work on, you know, game adjustments.
I mean, yeah, in other words, the Dallas fine. Stars don't even know, like, the team and the players themselves, they don't even know when they're getting on the ice next. They're like, we're playing it or preparing as if it will be Sunday, January 2nd on the road at the Arizona Coyotes. But I think there's still a very good chance that that game gets pushed. And then that would move their date back to January 6th. The first, you know, scheduled game after that is January 6th. So, I mean, that's over 2.5 weeks of being shut down because of this COVID outbreak. And the other thing is, it's not just the Dallas squad that this is impacting. It's also their the Texas squad down in the AHL. They have something like 15 players that are COVID positive right now.
15 players in the AHL's only unvaccinated player. So there we go.
Yeah. So like it's a lot. It's a lot going on. And that's realistically to people wondering why Dallas, you know, hasn't just recalled with the changes to have a taxi squad through the end of January and all this other stuff that the NHL and NHLPA have announced over the past week. That's why they can't even field an entire team. Even if you went to the depths of your AHL roster, four of those 15 players that are positive right now aren't on two-way contracts. So 11 impacted, I believe it's four defensemen and four defensemen and seven forwards. you don't have anyone. You literally would have to bring up guys from the East AHL into the NHL, and I don't think that the league's ready to quite go there yet.
It would be something. There's that, and then I think as well with Dallas, and we'll get into a little bit of the practical implications here. This is one of the areas where there is something of an advantage to having the AHL team so close at hand, and even without all of the reasons that you've just pointed out that it hasn't happened yet, Dallas is notorious for waiting on things like call-ups because it really just takes a couple of hours to get, assuming the Texas Stars are home, obviously, assuming both teams are home, obviously, but you know, you can get a player from Cedar Park to Dallas in fairly short order. So they've traditionally been, you know, when they're calling guys up, they'll wait and get them an AHL game, you know, an extra AHL game. They don't rush, in other words.
Well, part of that is just managing your cap. So, like, hats off to the Stars for being able to do that. So a lot of that is driven for that reason. But, you know, in a situation like this, yeah, I think it's possible you might start seeing guys testing out of protocol at the AHL level and then immediately getting the call to be like, all right, now get your car.
I mean, let's just you know, getting into brutal math, but is there a way that this can be spun as a good thing and that they're getting it out of the way? Like, is it at the risk of being, you know, let's just dive into logistics, right? Is it better to have this happen while the entire league is going through it during what is already a stoppage in play versus having this pop up like, you know, a month earlier or a month later when a stretch of games is potentially in mid-swing?
Oh, absolutely. I think it puts everybody on even footing, right? Like, this isn't going to be a scenario where Dallas is starting the season 2 weeks behind everyone else, and then also has the state trying to kill us in the middle of that too, you know, and condensing their schedule even further. So I think it puts everybody on more even ground because, I mean, at this rate, I don't know that there's a single team that doesn't have some kind of impacted scheduling that's going to have to occur. So,
yeah,
you know, I think in some ways,
I mean, you'd rather be Dallas going through it right now than the New York Islanders going through it at the start of the season when there wasn't as sympathy is the wrong word, but you know, they didn't reschedule a lot of games early on when it was just the Islanders and just the Senators and, you know, a handful of teams going through it. So like, you know, if they'd had those problems earlier, they would have had to, you know, trot out some pretty bare bones rosters. And at least now there's a chance that the next time they take, you know, there could be a handful of AHL players on it, but at least the next time they take the ice, it's every possibility that they take the ice with a largely NHL complete squad.
Yeah. And I think, you know, had it, had it continued to be isolated to just the Calgary Flames, to just the New York Islanders, to, you know, these teams that seem to have these pockets of outbursts and then it would kind of settle down, I think we would still continue to see the league trying to get through as many of these games as possible. But then the other part that plays into it is the fact that Canada just announced, like, you're back to 50% capacity maximum in-person live events. So as they try to stem the outbreak of Omicron in their country. So I, you know, the NHL.
And there's already word there on that point. There's already some talk about helping the Canadian teams from a revenue perspective and moving some of the games. If they can shuffle home games out of a stretch where they're going to be limited attendance, there's at least some conversation about doing that. If they think that they're going to get full buildings later in the season, can something be done with the schedule?
Yeah. So, you know, in some ways that's also going to mean, like, for Dallas, maybe you have Winnipeg come to town and they're here for 3 or 4 games in a row. Does that suck from a fan perspective? Sure. I mean, you like variety. Everybody likes variety. It's why they call it the spice of life. I will say,
unless the Stars win, in which case I don't particularly care who they play.
Exactly.
Especially between last season and stretches of this season, I would take a week's worth of games against the Arizona Coyotes if it meant Dallas might win a couple of them.
Wouldn't we all? But yeah, so I think there's, you know, there's so many moving parts. There's so many unknowns that, honestly, you just kind of have to roll with it all. You just have to pretty much wake up every day and say, what's going to happen today?
Yeah.
And be surprised by basically nothing.
You know, at least the Stars have some experience doing so. So let's get out of the, you know, let's get out of the COVID zone just for a minute and talk about some actual real life hockey before we just drive each other completely crazy with miserable, open-ended, unanswerable questions that we can't control. So as we sit and talk, Dallas is sitting at, what is it, 32 points, 29 games played. That is a good for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th place in their division, right behind Winnipeg. They're an even 5-5 over the last 10. They've won 2 in a row. Of course, before that modest 2-game winning streak, there was, what, the 5-game losing streak. Before that was the 7-game winning. So it's been a season, as they say, even without all the virus stuff, we'd be pulling out our hair. Give me a brief summary of where on earth are the Dallas Stars right now? Easy questions, right?
I don't think they even know. And so that makes it really hard for us. You know, we're not in the locker room. We're not in the meetings. We don't know what's said behind closed doors. This team has shown that they have the ability to go both ways. They could absolutely be a lottery team if they tried hard enough. They could absolutely rattle off, you know, 10-game winning streak coming out of this and just completely annihilate, you know, and make up ground. The one thing that plays in their favor is that they do still have games in hand on pretty much the majority of their
I mean, they've
except
got
for Colorado. They've
got game in hand. They've played 29. Ahead of them in the division, Minnesota's played 30. Nashville has 30. The Blues have 31.
Nashville has 31.
Then the NHL's website is behind.
The NHL app says.
Oh, there you go. The app is correct. Yes, the app is correct. Google is wrong. Of course, it's Google's fault. So, yeah. So, Nashville has played 31. Anaheim has played. Good God. Seeing them that high in the standings is insane. So, Dallas sits 12th in the conference, and they have, I mean, they're really, they don't have more than 3 games on anybody, to be completely honest. They're kind of in the thick of it.
Yeah, but they're only 4 points out of a wild card spot. And at the end of the day, if your entire identity is just...
Sorry.
Yeah, but games in hand on all of them. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. I'm not saying it's easy, but they're still within shouting distance. And so I think that's the one thing, is at least they had that 7-game win streak to, you know, cushion the 5-game losing streak. this team.
I mean, it's sometimes with this team, it's the way they do things. Like in a vacuum, knowing everything they had going on, if I told you they'd be sitting 12th in the conference within, you know, a puncher's chance of the playoff, if I told you this is where they'd be without giving you the actual order of games, I don't think that you would be happy. But at the same time, it wouldn't be, you know, bleak. But again, it's because of the way that, you know, almost setting an NHL record for longest stretch without a regulation win, followed immediately by almost setting a franchise record for wins in a row, followed by setting a franchise record for, you know, or not a franchise record, sorry, but first time in, I think, 10 years, something absurd for games without a single point. Like, the way that they do things is just infuriating.
Well, you know, this is the NHL. No soap operas. Just hockey.
God. All right. So as you say, you know, the positives are, right, so just if you go up to right around Calgary's in seventh place, right, Calgary's sitting with 36 points, seventh place, Dallas is in 12th with 32 points. So a 4-point gap, and really Colorado in sixth is at 36 as well. I'm excluding them because they have 27 games played. So they're way up on everybody. But, you know, nobody ahead of Dallas. Calgary's 5-4-1, Edmonton's 4-6-0, Winnipeg is 5-4-1, San Jose 5-5-0. LA 5-4-1. There'll be a quiz later, but the positives to me are, as you said, they don't have a ton of games at hand, but they have at least one over most of the people between them and the playoffs. And then the second piece is, it's not like anybody ahead of them is, you talk about going on a 10 game streak. Hell, winning 5 or 6 in a row is probably enough to get a team into the playoffs right now, the way that the Western Conference is shaped up. So it's not, you know, given what we know about where various teams are in the competitive cycle, seeing, you know, the two teams immediately ahead and behind the Stars, you know, seeing those as San Jose, Los Angeles, Vancouver, and Chicago is a pretty brutal look. But as you point out, there are some green shoots of optimism as we head into the second half of the season.
Sure. There's always optimism. There's always pessimism. That's the, you know, slice of life here. But the thing that I think the biggest thing for us will be to see how they come out of this COVID break, mm-hmm. and how they respond in that first game. I think that's going to tell you a lot about how this team's going to be able to be. Because on the one hand, a mid-season break for Jamie Benn, for Tyler Seguin, for Radulov, for Pavelski, and all of the other old guys on the team, Elder Statesman.
And frankly, even some of the younger ones, given the minutes and the prior, you know, the way that, you know, look at Hintz's health history, look at what this team requires of Miro on a night in and night out basis. Like, even the young legs, I think, you know, giving them an extra break isn't the worst thing in the world, just to exactly expand your point.
So, you know, in some ways, maybe they look at this and they say, okay, we get healthier and we're fresher coming out of this, and then they can rattle off a win streak. At the same time, Dallas has proven time and time and time and time again that if you give them time off, they absolutely fall flat on their faces.
Yes, strong starts, with the exception of the Pavelski and Sons, right? Strong starts aren't exactly this team's forte.
Yeah, so. I think we'll be able to tell a lot based on that. So for me, I'm going to look at probably the 5 or 6 games that get whatever that looks like when they come back onto the ice. And I think it'll depend on a number of factors, but they've got to find ways to win. And here's the thing. When they played St. Louis back in early December, St. Louis was having their own COVID issues, and they were in the midst of a franchise setting X number of games and, you know, one in a row, because they were able to just basically plug and play players. Yep. And here's our system, and here it is, and it is what it is. It's not cute, but we're still able to win games. So if Dallas can figure that particular piece out, maybe it'll be fine.
I mean, maybe it will be. And I think, you know, other bits of optimism, and this is, again, strictly in a hockey context, there's a personal cost, but it does seem like for the moment, Dallas has solved their goaltending, right? The previous kind of cluster of bodies in the crease and question marks and all of that. It looks like they at least know what they want their plan to be moving forward. And of course, performance is going to be a big part of it. So positives, that seems to be working. They've got one line that seems to be working for them as well. So there are some building blocks, right? Jamie Benn has been more good than bad as a center ever since they moved him back there after inexplicably moving him off the pivot to start the season. So there's some stuff.
Him and Sagan and Gurionov had two really strong games there at the end of December. Before everything got paused.
So yeah, which, maybe that's kind of where I'm going. Those are guys the Stars need in a big way.
Yeah, maybe they finally found that second line. You know, and at the same time, maybe you hope that maybe just with rest and a mental reset, maybe they can figure it out. There's got to be a way to get back to that winning way. And they were doing it before. And, you know, in some ways the pause kind of sucks because you kind of felt like they finally started to get some momentum going after that 5-game losing streak. And then they won 2. And, you know, I would just give a lot for just like some nice, easy 4-2 wins, like in a row.
Be amazing.
Just make it easy on ourselves going down the stretch here.
And I think that's particularly important because this team has been bad on the road so far. And if you want to talk about getting better on the road, they are going to need to find consistency outside of that top line as they, you know, start needing to pick up points away from the American Airlines Center.
And I would hope that the coaching staff is doing their own internal review and reflection. Because to me, when a team has that stark of a difference between the road and home, that's going to come down to matchups and coaching.
Yeah.
And so
I would agree with you and expand to say it's, you know, you look for extreme splits home and the road. You look at teams that don't start well. You look at teams that go on bad streaks. Like there are a lot of things that imply, shall we say, structure and organization.
Yeah. So, you know, and the thing is we've seen a COVID pause have good impact on the team. Specifically, what Bonus and his staff did during the last COVID pause before the bubble run. And I mean, yeah, it didn't look great the first like 3 games out the gate, but they figured it out and they started
got pretty good after that, goals, right?
And that was good. So like, you know, maybe they've had time to kind of sit back, and that's not something that you get often during the season. So I would hope that everybody's been taking advantage. Tyler Seguin actually mentioned in his availability that with so few guys on the ice, you can't really work on like team structures or systems or anything like that, but you can work on your own individual skills. So you can work on, you know, going into the corners, you can work on your face offs, you can work on, you know, defending passes, you can work on tip shots, that kind of stuff. So I think in some ways you hope that the guys who have been healthy enough to stay on the ice have been able to utilize that time productively.
There's certainly some guys that need it. And he's, you know, Sagan is definitely on that list. And as much as we talk about Dallas's outlook and what they need to do to make progress in the second half of the season, a lot of that starts with they've got to get more out of him than they've seen so far this season to have, in my opinion, to the path to sustained success is more production from Tyler.
Well, it's not just Tyler. I mean, like, no. Real, Alexander Radulov is not exactly blowing it up either right now, although he has been contributing a lot of assists. So like he's been,
and I think that's
plays. That's good.
And that's one of the differences. Like he needs to do more, obviously, but even when Radulov doesn't score, there are more ways that Alex Radulov can influence a game without scoring a point right now. From what I've seen so far this season, there have been a couple of games where he has actually played quite well and had nothing to show for it, whereas Universe is just not really being there.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the great things that he does is just his puck possession, and that's not going to necessarily show, but when you're able to go out there and hound the opposition and keep the puck and cycle it and cause the other team to get pinned in their own zone, and you're able to make that line change and he comes off the ice and then the next shift is able to do some good. Like, those are things that don't show up on the score sheets, but that we have seen him do this year. So like, to me, Would it be nice if he popped in a few more goals? Absolutely.
And he will. To be very clear, he will. He will need to. I'm not putting a marker saying he definitely will.
Well, but why not?
Why not, right?
Come on. Take a stand.
Think can. I love it. Okay, then he will, both in terms of has to and, in fact, will.
Yeah, but then, like, you know, you'd like to see more out of the Raffle Foxa Glendinning set.
Ugh.
I would really appreciate Jacob Peterson being put into more of a role where he could succeed. So I think there are some things, and you hope that, you know, with this time off, maybe you see some changes or some tweaks as a result. Maybe you don't.
I mean, it's we talked about this a lot over the last couple of seasons, but it really, you know, once again, the Dallas Stars find themselves facing a referendum stretch of games when, you know, I don't think it's insane to say that they have the talent to be, you know, again, they shouldn't be mucking it up with the likes of San Jose, Los Angeles, Vancouver, and Chicago, right? That should not be, even if you take the most pessimistic take on their roster's, you know, construction, right? That should not be their cohort, right? And so once again, we find ourselves facing a half season where Dallas really can, you know, prove themselves worthy of some of the accolades they court onto themselves, or they can, you know, fall again short of the expectations they set for themselves.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is this team does seem to respond when they're down and out. So at least here of late. So, you know, that gives me confidence that maybe they'll just figure it out. I mean,
they've had how many years to figure it out? Who knows? Hope springs eternal.
How many years? It's been all of the years.
it's hard to get me optimistic about this team until I see a little bit more, is all I'm going to say. But you're right. They are positioned to succeed, or they haven't, let me, a better way to say it, they have the opportunity to succeed. They're not, you know, they're not hopeless.
I mean, yeah, sure. They're not hopeless. But
they have the opportunity to fail as well, right?
Yes, they do. Yes, they absolutely do. But here's what I'm going to say. Here is your dose of optimism. Here's why you should be optimistic for the rest of the season. Goaltending.
Yeah.
They got it. As long as they can give them some run support every now and then, they're always going to be in the games. They're always going to have the opportunity to get points and win games. So at the end of the day, you've got the most critical piece. The rest of it just needs to work itself out.
Well, and I'd go so far as to say, so goaltending, obviously, you've also got one highly functional line, right? Pavelski, Robertson, and Cy Hintz. There we go. That's who it is.
You can tell we haven't watched hockey in a minute.
Maybe I need to postpone my podcasting. But the in addition to the goaltending, there is a line that, you know, kind of the old days, right, when it was Sagan, Ben, and Spezza, followed by Sagan, Ben, and Radulov, right? They have, again, a security blanket unit that you can throw over the boards, and more often than not, you're going to have a good night and get a couple in the back that, or at least get a couple of chances. So, you know, and I'll even extend it further, then you've got Miro, right? So you've got a bona fide number one defenseman, you've got a bona fide number one scoring line, and from all indications are you've got a pair of very good goaltenders in your crease, and those are not terrible building blocks.
John Klingberg says, hey.
I mean, I'm just, results vary.
Yeah. Although I like that you called them adequate. Like Pavelski and Sons has been one of, and by the way, I don't like that. I don't like that nickname. We got to do better. But I
like it because of the tracksuit picture. You know, you got a nice net here. Be a shame if some pucks got in it. You know, they're good boys.
Oh man, but yeah, they're like one of the hottest lines in the league. So to call them adequate feels maybe a little more respect on them. Is all.
That's fair. That's entirely fair. They're not just adequate. They're, you know, most teams would, you know, they're the envy of almost the entire league. That line has been dynamite, has been unplayable, has been everything the Stars could possibly have dreamed of, and even more so. So I was actually reading something the other day about some of Micah's numbers and some of the stats, and Jason Robertson is presenting a very interesting challenge for some modeling and projections right now. Because Jason Robertson has never been bad. And it's a very strange thing. Like a lot of, you know, NHL models, they'll look at multiple seasons, trying to account for the peaks and the valleys and trying to get to what the player is actually doing. And then you get to Jason Robertson, who has been successful from pretty much the moment he stepped on the ice with the Dallas Stars. And it really screws up projecting his growth long term, because none of the models can assume that there will be any tail off or any trailing, which I think is kind of funny.
Suck it, Dom.
Indeed. So we've talked quite a bit about what's good and kind of where we're hopeful and how there might be optimism. We've even skirted a little bit around some of the things this needs to improve. But before we get out of here, Taylor, I do want your thoughts around what is, in your opinion, the single biggest area that Dallas needs to improve to have a shot at climbing back into the playoff picture?
I mean, they just got to find a way to get points. Even if they're going to lose, they need to figure out a way to lose better. We laugh and joke, and it feels like a million years since they went to overtime seemingly every night, but now they haven't been in a while, and like, you got to find a way to start losing better.
It's the Columbus Blue Jackets points. Model, right? If nobody can beat you in regulation, it's real hard to kill you.
Exactly. So to me, I think that's the biggest thing is because they have been in a lot of very close games up into the third period. So they've just got to figure out a way to either find that tying goal and get that point, even on nights when they maybe don't deserve it, or they need to figure out a way to start defending those leads so that they don't lose the full 2 points like they did against Vegas started their 5-game stretch. So
that's a big one. And we talked earlier about it. For me, it's, you can't assume, as good as that first line has been, you need more, right? The margins for success, the way, you know, everything from the way that this team, their structure and their system is built, to the personnel they seem to have on the ice, like everything has such fine and such kind of tight margins. Whether it's finally finding a unit with Jamie Benn or with Tyler Seguin that can get going, whether it's you know, finding, you know, getting another beast mode stretch out of Jamie Benn at some point in the back half, there has to be a second unit that does more than just have a good game here and there. There needs to be a consistent secondary threat for this team to truly, you know, make itself a force, right? And there are plenty of candidates for it. We've mentioned most of them, but they've got to find more.
We just need more.
Just need more. Cause you know, right now it's the other bit is, right, when they get a lead, they're fantastic. But you know, when they're not, when they can't, they're not. They're not a great team chasing. And when you can do things matchup wise on the road to, I won't say eliminate, but mitigate the success of Pavelski's line, then they struggle. So at some point, this team is going to have to win a game where they get absolutely not just a game. Sorry. At some point, this team is going to have to win a stretch of games where they get absolutely nothing out of that first unit. And right now, it doesn't look like they could, but it looks like they probably should be able to if you just look at the, you know, the overall roster.
Yep. And then I guess, I mean, the other thing I would say is maybe a secondary concern or area of opportunity is finding a way to score in the power play that doesn't involve John Klingberg. And by that, I mean, like, look somewhat competent as a power play unit when John Klingberg is not on the ice. So, yeah, that would be the other thing I'd be looking at.
Or just don't, and under no circumstances allow John Klingberg to not be a power play option on the ice for the Dallas Stars. Hint, hint, sign the man, hint, hint.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a whole other thing that we're going to have to watch. Just going down the stretch here, you do wonder, with all these games being postponed, what impact that might have on the trade deadline.
Frankly, the standings as well, right? It becomes... as painful and obnoxious as it is right now to talk about the future of John Klingberg with the Dallas Stars, it's going to be a million times worse if we're, you know, past that 50-60 game mark and Dallas is, you know, middling or hasn't been able to push themselves back into serious contention.
Yep. So, you know, those are all things that the team needs to figure out for themselves, which way they want to go. Do you want your GM to have motivation to go out and acquire players and get you help at the deadline, or are you not going that route? So, like, you know, part of that's on the players. If you want to keep this team intact, you got to show up and you got to show out.
Yeah. And you know, from a management perspective, right now that you have a definitive answer on the Ben Bishop situation, right? You no longer, to a certain degree, right? This team was, and I'm sure that Jim Nill knew definitively earlier and more than any of us did, but to some degree, you had to factor in the, well, what if he makes it back line? And you also had to factor in Anton Khudobin and all. Now you don't. And so I think you can move, if this team earns it, right, either by performing well or performing poorly, you can move a little bit more definitively to plug a hole or to acquire an asset, knowing that you're not likely to be stung on the back end by Ben Bishop's situation changing in a meaningful way, and all of a sudden you've got an extra $5 million on your cap.
Yeah, it definitely does, you know, free up some opportunities for him. To be able to play with that LTIR relief, although you do wonder how much all of this COVID stuff is going to impact that cap picture. I do not envy having to be a cap expert right now in the league. I've never have, but especially now with all of these crazy rules. So you do wonder how much Jim Nill really has to play with at the deadline. But, you know, at the same time, it's like you said, team's got to come out and they've got to show which way that wind is going to blow, so to speak. They do that by starting to put some points in the bank here.
It would be nice, right? Coming out of the break, throwing some big wins together. That would be would go a long way to relaxing everybody.
And I mean, like, Dallas isn't above that kind of drama. They literally do not have boring seasons. So to me, that's just the next step in the evolution of this season's storyline is, a big, big, strong start out of the gate here. So hopefully they prove me right.
And we'll see. And at this point, we don't know when they'll have the opportunity to start proving you right. Again, as you mentioned, the game against Arizona is the earliest they could play. It has not been moved or postponed or anything like that yet. At the same time, it's not exactly etched in stone. So we'll probably have a couple of days yet before we really know when we'll see the Dallas Stars take the ice again. And we'll probably have a few more sleepless nights before we know who the Dallas Stars taking the ice will be on that future night, whenever it might happen. So lots of questions to answer, lots of work to be done heading into the second half of the season. And we're just going to have to be flexible as fans and hope that everything works out for the best, I suppose.
Yep. You just got to wake up every day and say, what are we going to do today?
One foot in front of the other. Well, thank you for having a little talk. We're going to try and get another one of these together, talk some New Year's resolutions coming up. Not exactly sure when or who will be involved in that, but KT is working her magic there. Otherwise, don't forget to like us and to download us, follow us on the socials, check out the DBD site. We do read and answer questions, so if you're ever curious or want to get a topic addressed on the podcast, let us know. Any final words, Taylor?
No, just everybody stay healthy.
There we go. Stay healthy, and we'll see you in 2022.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.